Golf Smarter Premium number 501, published on August 11, 2015. And stay tuned to hear how you can win a pair of brand new, custom fit TK15 wedges from Ben Hogan Golf. The 2015 PGA Championship, betting odds and advice with our gambling gurus.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, gentlemen.
Good morning, Fred.
Morning.
How are you?
Good.
Let's get right to business here. The last time we were together, we were talking about the Open Championship. And the only time we're going to be doing this is on the majors for 2015. So this will be our last one of the year. Let's do a quick recap. How'd you do in the Open Championship? Well, you made some predictions. Made some bets.
I mean, you might have heard me mentioned that I liked Zach Johnson at 80-1. So I did pretty well because I picked about four outright winners, and he was one of them. So it was a hit. It was a hit for me, for sure. But, yeah, we had a perfect example of a guy that's a little bit shorter than most, but a real, you know, a guy who's in great control of his game, one of the best wedge players in the world, and he just hit some putts, played consistent, had control over his golf game, and, you know, he saw what happened. There was some wind out there. Some of the guys were tested. There was a lot of variance and just overall luck given the way the weather shook out in the weekend, and it was all said and done. ZJ was Mr. Clutch. So
yeah, I think that probably cemented him in the World Golf Hall of Fame. You know, you win a Masters and an Open at the Old Course, probably fit to get in the, I don't know, what has he won, 13 times now? So that's pretty good for him.
Yeah, it was a great tournament.
Yeah, it was.
It was really
fun.
It
was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, you just never know on Thursday or Friday what's going to happen. Saturday, you start getting excited. But the last 2 hours of any major, no matter what's going on, it's so unpredictable. Someone you think has got it in the pocket, and then all of a sudden they don't. And it's just great drama. It's great television.
Yeah, I mean, I was... Everyone knows me. My big guy was Sergio, and I was losing my mind because on the front nine on Sunday he took charge, and it looked like he was going to make a big time run at it. He caught fire, and I don't think he made a really clutch up and down out of the bunker right before his descent started, and yeah. I don't know. I don't think he necessarily collapsed, but I mean he started hitting at every single bunker on the property, and I mean. I don't know. I didn't really feel like it was like a Sergio collapse. I just think things didn't break his way.
Okay.
I mean, you hear guys like, people talk about like Sergio, like he's just a choke artist. But, you know, no one says that about Adam Scott anymore, even though he like really choked one away, you know, would put it three straight bogeys.
Oh,
at the Open Championship a couple years ago, the one that Ernie Els won.
Yeah.
You know, to lose, he had to bogey like three straight holes.
Yeah, and he did it.
And I mean, he collapsed on the back nine the same way that Sergio did at St. Andrews. But I mean, he finished at six, and he was in contention. So I was really happy with the way he played. He continues the very next weekend. He top five. I think he finished tie five. I'm not exactly sure right now, off the top of my head. But the Omega Masters, he continues to play really well. And I will not give up on my boy Sergio. I think he will win a major before it's all said and done. He's simply too good not to,
yeah.
In my opinion.
He's going to go down as one of the all-time goods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a couple players you can see in there. There's some that will obviously be remembered as a great, but he's probably just going to be one of the all-time goods.
Yeah, and I mean, at his age, I mean, his ball striking numbers are just insanity. He was hitting not quite up to his standards at the start of the year, and I mean, I've been watching him recently. He's hitting it insanely long now, and he's dialed in, you know, right? He's right where he needs to be, you know, top 10 ball strikers on tour by the stats, and everyone knows he's one of the purists. So, I don't know. I'm just really rooting for the guy. I think if he continues to play golf, he'd be one of those guys like, you know, like Langer or Montgomery now, who's just on tour, just on the Champions Tour, just tearing it up, you know?
Yeah.
He'll get 10 senior majors.
Dude, the thing is, I never wanted Montgomery to win, but I've always wanted Sergio to win. I've just liked Colin Montgomery since I was, I don't know. I've never was pulling for him, so it's different. Yeah. I'd feel great if Sergio won.
But overall, I mean, yeah, like I said, it was a great weekend for me because I hit on Zach Johnson. I mean, some of the other long shots that we like, Tommy Fleetwood, you could talk about that situation.
He didn't play great. He just didn't play great. And who else? Wiesberger, I chose too. He didn't play great either. Neither of them could make any putts.
Fleetwood, we had him in a matchup against Westwood, and
he won that.
Remember he collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
He came out, shot 3-under on the first day in the tough conditions, and then on Saturday against Westwood, he came out and he shot like 4-over.
Oh, yeah.
The cut by one shot.
Yeah, he got on the right side of the draw and then just blew it.
Yeah. So, you know, that was frustrating. But, overall, I hope some of you guys got behind the ZJ prediction, and overall, just the thought that guys like ZJ at 80-1, I'm looking at him right now at Whistling, where he top five in 2010.
Yeah, we'll get there.
He's gonna be.
Let's stay on the open for now.
His odds are gonna shrink in half now.
Yeah.
Because he won the last major. But what does that really mean? I mean, it just goes to show
you how...
It just
means he won the last major.
It means he won the last major. We all knew that he had the stones to win a major, and he had the game to win a major beforehand. Yeah. But that just goes to show you how the gambling market can just really quickly change based on one result, you know?
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of luck involved and a lot of variance on, you know, how many putts you make and things that are basically, you know, out of control.
And Bubba, how'd you do?
I did well. I think that Fleetwood matchup was really the only one I lost.
Mm.
It shouldn't have shaken down that way. Like, I would still bet against Westwood with Fleetwood probably this week or in the PGA or whatever. I mean, just the way their games are trending. So I guess that was a misstep, but I still don't feel like it was a bad bet. And then what else? I think I had a good weekend too. I need to look through
and
review.
We're recording this, a week and a half in advance, and
yeah.
We've got the Bridgestone this weekend, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we don't really want to spend time talking that because it's gonna be old news by the time we get to this.
Mm-hmm.
But we are focused now on Whistling Straits. Let's talk about. I want to know. Did you guys win any money?
Oh yeah. Tiger
won.
Huh?
On the open. Oh, Tiger won a bunch of money.
Because yeah, it's hard not to win when you pick a guy at 80-1 and you throw any amount of money on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I had a great weekend.
Yeah, you'd have had to do some pretty irresponsible betting,
which I did not do. I mean, I had it pretty dialed in. Not everything shook my way, but. Yeah, like I said, it's not. I generally only pick for any given golf tournament that I'm taking relatively seriously, like that tournament. I'm never going to pick more than three or four at the very most outright winners, and they're all going to be generally, with the exception of Sergio in that tournament, 40-1 or longer. And so, I mean, it's pretty sweet when you pick three outright winners, and one's 60 and one's 80-1. Like for me, it was Fleetwood, Sergio. At 35 and Zach Johnson at 80, I had no other picks.
Really?
So, you know, when you hit one at 80-1 when you only chose three guys,
it's pretty good. A happy weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And that awesome. Was amazing. And I did find some ways to hedge, like I talked about. I'm trying to think which day it was. I basically had a nice Louis hedge.
Okay.
That I was able to get going, and I did put a little bit in this kind of grouping bet, like a big three bet, about after Saturday, I believe it was. It was Louis, Adam Scott, or DJ after Friday night to win as a pick versus the field. DJ, that's a whole different topic, but that was just fascinating. I mean, once again, I mean, what we said before at the very start of the podcast – the first time we're talking about the U.S. Open was basically trying to gauge where his head's at.
Right.
And then I think after watching the U.S. Open, we both felt like, you know, well, you know, he just kind of just really slipped at the end, but basically, you know, not that bad a performance. But I mean, right there, I mean, what we saw at St. Andrews, I mean, he just choked it off in an incredible fashion.
Hmm.
I mean, what can you even say about that? That was insane.
Yeah. The thing is that's scary is like, man, he doesn't even really have to putt good to contend. So he's bound to win, but then it just seems like he's destined to lose at the same time.
If he played mediocre, he would have contended, if not won, down the stretch on Sunday. He came out and no birdie putts fell for him on front nine on Saturday, and the guy started shooting himself in the foot left and right and just gave up.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And then on Sunday, he gave up again. I mean, that was one of the big things that went against us that weekend.
Do you think that his head disappears?
We bet really heavy on him against Jim Furyk on Sunday. And then, you know.
I mean, as you're watching, do you see there and go, oh, look at that. You can tell he just quit. He realizes he's out of contention of winning. I mean, there's still money to be made. Do you think he just
Yeah, he gets really down on himself. He really does.
Do you really think he gives up?
Plus,
I mean, I don't think he gives up. I just think he does not have that resiliency, you know, that you see. He doesn't – like Jordan Spieth, every time Jordan Spieth makes a big mistake and puts up a big number on a hole, it's like he just dials into a whole nother gear.
Yeah.
And it drives him forward, you know, and it motivates him to get his shit together. Whereas DJ, it feels like it's kind of the opposite, you know.
Yeah, he gets deflated.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of bouncing back, he just gets deflated.
Yeah,
it sucks. And it's like I was saying, I just don't think he's very good at thinking his way around.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. He must not have as strong a game plan. He just must not, because some of his misses are just in such bad places.
I don't know about his caddy, but
it's his brother. It's his brother.
Yeah.
Fucking nepotism. Yeah. Fire him.
Because they have some really marginal interactions on the golf course.
Yeah.
It seems like he needs a.
Yeah,
it's a caddy who has a little bit more with it, you know.
Yeah, I think that Spieth or Greller and would probably be good enough at thinking themselves around a golf course by themselves, and then you get the two of them together, and it's like, wow, these two dudes are really locked into what they're doing.
Feel like he just flounders out there sometimes.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, DJ just, I don't know. It's like he has like a carefree attitude or so. I don't really know what it is. I can't really pinpoint
it. It's hard to put your finger on it. But Jason Day really impressed
us.
Especially
without talking to him, but that's not going to get you anywhere either, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jason Day really impressed us because he had to play in some windy conditions over stretches, and he, you know, he managed the golf course really, really well for the most part. And he went against his historically bad record, the Open Championship, and showed that, you know, that he can absolutely contend in that tournament too. So Jason Day and his health issues seemed like they had been solved for the moment.
Yeah.
Vertigo comes and goes.
Yeah.
You can't really predict what's going to happen.
Yeah. As such a high ball hitter, it's really crazy that he managed to do so well. And it's like the same with Whistling Straits. He played well at Whistling Straits last time, and you just wouldn't think typically that would set up for somebody who hits a 6-iron. I think they said the peak of his ball flight was 135 feet. He hits it 13 stories in the air.
Wow.
You can fly a kite up there. You know what I mean?
He's going to hit somebody's drone flying over the course.
It is wild that he can hit it that high and still manage it, because if you think about the way that all sets up, it definitely would favor like a Zach Johnson, like hit a low bullet, always have the ball in front of me, don't ever make a big mistake type of player. But
he's just hitting it so pure right now that it doesn't matter.
He probably doesn't think about the wind nearly as much as I would.
He might have,
Yeah.
All right. Well, you gave a good segue here. Let's start talking about Whistling Straits. It's not a stranger to majors.
No, and I actually...
So we know we have a lot of data to input here on... Right? I mean, this helps a lot.
2010.
Helps that you've seen this course in a major, right?
Yeah. Last night, we were talking about on the way over here, they actually have a show on Golf Channel now that they do called Golf's Greatest Rounds.
Uh-huh.
And it airs on Tuesday nights, and they usually show a recap of either a really good version or the last version of the tournament that's going to be played that week.
Okay.
But for some reason, they didn't show Firestone from last year. They showed the Whistling Straits from 2010, and I watched the entire thing over again. And, yeah, there was another one. That was one of DJ's first collapses.
Yeah, break that down for people that don't know that.
Okay.
Just the whole thing, because it's just...
I mean, DJ that year had already...
Was this, if it's sand, it's a bunker?
Yeah.
Oh.
DJ that year had already... He had already blown a 54-hole lead at Pebble Beach.
Right.
So he looked like he was going to win the U.S. Open, flush that down the toilet.
On Sunday.
On Sunday. Was in contention.
Or wasn't that on the 18th hole at Pebble? I mean, it was like right at the end, he just kind of...
Yeah, I remember him hitting it like out of bounds or into a hazard and him like looking for his ball in like waist-high grass.
Oh.
It seems like he like always hits a draw, and then when he gets nervous, he gets loose and starts blocking it. And, you know, if you set up to hit a draw and then block it, it's not going to end up somewhere desirable usually. And then,
yeah,
that's his nervous thing, is he just doesn't finish his swing and starts trying to steer it around. Which is, that's what we thought maybe had been a changing point with him at Chambers Bay, because he came down the stretch and he hit all the shots to put himself in position, and then he just let the putter take him out of it. And that's what, at Whistling Straits last time, he didn't capitalize on any of the birdie putts he had. And then when it got real, you know, like the 16th hole is a par 5, it's 570, definitely reachable for that dude. And you could land a, you know, 747 in the fairway, and he hits it right into a bunch of fescue and stuff. And, you know, if you're Dustin Johnson, the only reason you're in contention in that tournament is because you're probably like 9 under on the par 5s for the week or better. And then when you're playing the one par 5 that really matters all week, you step up there and do that. So... yeah, it was disappointing, and then obviously the ruling and stuff. But
right, so let's help me remember. I remember if it's, you know, if it's sand, it's a bunker. But it was like no bigger than his foot, and
well,
they ruled it a bunker, but he didn't, and he ground his club. Is that right?
They
remembering this.
I think, I don't remember exactly, but the last time they used like a helicopter and went over the course and counted, and there was like 900 and something bunkers, what they determined to be bunkers.
Bunkers, yeah.
But of those, only 130, a little over 10% or maybe 15% or so were actually like pot bunkers with a completely enclosed edge where you would walk up to it and just go, hey, this is a sand trap.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other 720 were like, and...
he thought it was a waste area, right?
Yeah, he thought it was a waste area.
Well, and wasn't it an area that the fans had been trampling?
Yeah, it looked, it looked nothing like a...
No, it didn't look like a bunker.
And,
no,
they had so cruel. I think they had a local rule for the week that on all those areas where it is a waste bunker, you know, you can ground your club, swing, test what the ground feels like underneath. And he didn't even do that. It's not like he was taking full practice swings, hitting his club into the ground. He stepped up behind the ball and... set it down on the ground at address. And, you know, I don't know if you really get some type of advantage. You have to hit a long fairway bunker shot so precisely that I don't think grounding your club would give you an advantage. But, yeah, bad ruling. And I remember watching it live, and they were showing his face as, like, the official told him what was happening.
Yeah.
And they're, like, showing him through the window in the scoring booth, and you could just see his the emptiness like in his eyes, because it was his tournament to win there too.
Yeah.
And
that was a huge WTF moment.
Yeah. Going into that with 6 holes left, you would have thought Dustin Johnson or Bubba Watson was going to win.
Right.
And then Keimer, we were talking about it on the way here. Keimer went like 54 holes in a row without making a bogey at Whistling Straits, which is just insane. And he's not going to do it again. I mean, it just, that was the way he putted during that and during the US Open he won. It was like Danny Noonan from Caddyshack, or so he just did not. He didn't miss anything, none that mattered. So it was, yeah, it was. I had forgotten about that. So if you're gonna like research a tournament, that's an awesome. If you have DVR, just DVR Golf's Greatest Rounds, and
the leaderboard was amazing. Rory broke onto the scene. Jason Day was like 7 under. He was right there.
Rory looked like a Muppet last time they played here.
Was it Elkington contend or something like that?
Elkington contended. Yeah, because he finally started putting good, and he's always been like a low ball, like heat-seeking missile type of iron player.
Yeah, Zach Johnson was right there.
All right, well, I want to talk about the golf course. So, what have you learned? What do you know? What can you, you know?
Well,
are we betting against the golf course, or are we betting for it? What do we know about it other than the you know, the amount of bunkers?
Well, I used to work at the Ocean Course at Kew Island, which is kind of similar. It's all built on sand, and there's a lot of waste areas, and we had a local rule, you know, where you could ground your club and swing. So I'm, like, familiar with that type of golf course, pretty well familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely suits – most Pete Dye courses suit somebody that hits a draw. And, yeah, my brother had played there that also worked at the same golf course as me, and he – came back from the trip, and he was just like, dude, it's going to be so hard out there. And them shooting 11 under, I think 11 under was the number last time. That's insane golf to shoot 11 under at that venue. I mean,
look at the scorecard. It's like a slope 152.
Yeah.
The index is 78.2 or something like that from the tips.
Whoa.
Yeah. VJ Singh shot 4 over in the final round and won the first time they had it there.
Yeah.
Which is just... That doesn't happen unless
Wait,
it's
one. A, the slope is what?
152.
Yeah. Is that even pot? That's like the highest you can go, or is 154 is the highest?
I don't know. It's
I
up there.
I thought it was like 150. I looked at here. Let me look at it right here.
That's crazy.
It's absurd.
That's crazy. And how is the weather supposed to? Are it'll, we going to be whistling or?
It'll be windy.
Yeah.
It'll be windy. Yeah. And I hope it is. Okay, so
you want it to be as brutal on these guys as possible.
Well, yeah.
Do you like?
He wants to see Zach Johnson go back to back.
I do. Right. I do. Well, no. And they were interviewing Dustin Johnson before the final round and the last thing, and he was like, "Yeah, every hole out there is a potential train wreck," which you can understand why the guy probably lost the tournament with some horrible thinking like that.
Yeah.
But you got to keep the ball in front of you. Like I don't think people who have a propensity to make like a lot of doubles and stuff.
Mm.
There's just not a lot of places where if you make like a double or like a big number, there's not a ton of birdie opportunities to like get them back. So I don't think it sets up well for like a Ricky Fowler who, you know, if he's playing at whatever, some course that they play on tour all the time and he makes a double, he'll just bounce right back and make a couple of birdies and like homeostasis is restored. But it's not like that out there. I was watching it, and I don't know. I'd be curious to look at the double bogeys or worst.
152, 77.2.
Wow.
So that means, listeners, if you call yourself a 7 handicap and you go out to that course and play from the tips, expect to... You can shoot under 105, I think. You should feel pretty good about yourself.
Oh, my God. Now, would you prefer, this one for Bubba, and then I'll come back to you, Tiger, but do you prefer a tournament where the winner wins it at one under or even, or do you like seeing runaway trains and everybody's at, you know, 14, 15, and the winner is at minus 17 under?
I like it when there's a premium on hitting the green and two putting, like, because that's, and it happened at this tournament last time. That's how you really get an insane leaderboard, you know, where it's like Jason Day, Justin Rose, Bubba Watson, Sergio Kimer, like all those guys will just be up there if there's not a premium on birdies, because they'll just, you
know, grind it out.
Yeah. They'll just grind it out and make a lot of two putts and not make any big mistakes, you know, and that's not the nature.
Do you think anybody's game plan is to be, I don't know, do you call that conservative? Is just two putts, just get there and two putt, and just try to shoot par?
I mean, if you shoot two under a day, there's no way you're not in contention.
Wow.
So if you birdied two of the par fives and then played even par the rest of the time, that's an awesome game plan. Like,
okay.
If you shoot 8 to 10 under and you're not contending, I would. That's not going to happen. Let's just get that out of the way right now. If you're double digits under par and you don't win, you're going to be upset because you were real close. Because it's nobody's going to go shoot 18 under at this.
Yeah, it seems to me like what happened at the Masters this year. That's not going to happen at this golf course.
Yeah, the PGA.
No one's going to go as low as Spieth did.
The PGA Championship is fair. You know, you can hit it a little crooked. Like they were getting it out of some of the bad areas on the course last time because it's fescue and whatever. There's not like a crazy premium on the driving, but you got to, if you don't hit a good iron shot into the green, you're going to be like 10 feet below the green with like a wall made out of railroad ties between you and the flag. And it's just not, you're just not going to get up and down a lot missing the greens.
So is this golf course better on for being a PGA Championship or US Open?
PGA
Championship.
Yeah.
So basically, let me just break this down real quick so we know a little bit more about the golf course.
Yeah, my phone is ringing over there, and so we've lost our Periscope connection.
Oh, gosh.
It's disappeared. I can't answer the phone now. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, all right. So we hit an interesting situation this year where we had a classic Open Championship, you know, one of the most just, you know, old course of St. Andrews doesn't get any better than that, right? And you just got to see a classic link-style course, right? And then we had this sort of new look golf course, very kind of modern, U.S. Open, Chambers Bay, which had fescue grass. And, you know, everyone was like, whoa, because it looked so burned out. The greens weren't, you know, all that pure. There was crazy runouts from the fairway. It got very, very dry. So you had the same type of grass as you would have out at a classic link-style course in Scotland. But you had a lot of big elevation changes and mounting and that type of thing. So here we have another course that on the eye looks very much. It's on Lake Michigan, so near water. It looks on the eye very much like a Lynx-y style course, more so maybe than Chambers Bay. But the big difference is here is the grasses are different. The greens are bent grass, and as are the tees. And I guess initially, I think I may have read this, they might have been going for more fescue fairways, but now it's a big mix because it's a public golf course. People don't want to play burned out fairways. They want to play really lush fairways. So it's a blended fairways. So you're not going to have those absurd runouts that you had at the U.S. Open. It's going to play a little bit more traditionally. In that sense,
meaning the ball's not going to roll 70 yards on.
Yeah, you guys are going to have hit good tee shots and then have it take some crazy line and roll into a bunker like it did at some of those holes at Chambers Bay, which people obviously weren't.
Well, in Chambers Bay, you hit the green and it's still going to roll off.
Right,
I mean, you're right in the middle of the green and you have any backspin at all, it's gone.
So you have blended fairways, so they're going to look much more lush, and you know, the greens are bent grass, so it's going to have a totally different look. More what, you know, we're used to seeing, you know, on American courses. And then it gets into, as it gets to the primary and deeper rough in particularly, you know, more fescue-y. Okay. But I mean, this is a totally great fit for a PGA Championship.
Yeah. Yeah. You excited about this place?
Well, it was weird because they haven't played a lot of US Opens on a modern golf course, like, which, that's, you would definitely describe Whistling Straits as modern. And yeah, most of the U.S. Open venues, they've hosted it a bunch of times before, and it just, there's like a certain kind of course that just seems to suit that better than what they chose this year. I mean, I would have much rather seen it played at Marion again, or something, or Shinnecock, or Olympic Club, or Pebble Beach, or any of those old, great, like, timeless venues. I think it was weird for them to just choose this year that we're just going to go completely away from the game plan and go to like this radical, totally different experience. Cause I don't know. It's steeped in tradition.
Yeah.
Why the hell would you change something? Like, you know, they should have played it somewhere,
but
even if it was newer, it could have had like a more classic look.
So it is pretty cool though. We have three, other than the Masters, we have three courses that all have kind of a Lynx-y type look. And, aesthetically, this course is as appealing as it gets, in my opinion. It's a beautiful golf course. It's just going to be kind of another variation aesthetically on some of those other golf courses.
People
are going to love it.
Let's start talking about the players and your picks and the odds on various players. We've done a printout here, and we've got a long list of names. We won't start at the top. Let's go with our long shots first, and who we think are either good bets or have a chance of being in contention, but their odds are not there.
See, well, like to me, like if you get down to the bottom of the page and start looking at the super long shots, it's so hard to are so easy to start just eliminating people. Okay. Like sorry, Kevin Streelman, you're not going to win this week. Sorry, David Lingworth, you're not going to win this week. Because those guys that just kind of like lollipopping around out there, they're just not going to have a chance. They're just honestly not. Oh, wow, Colin Montgomery's in the field. Put a big X next to his name. but, yeah, there just takes a certain type of player to contend out there. And, like, so if you're looking at two long shots and say, let's see right here. You got Kevin Streelman and Cameron Tringali. And Streelman's 200-1 and Tringali's 250-1. I think that Tringali has a way better chance of winning.
Well, Tringali can win, and Streelman cannot.
Cannot win. Yeah, yeah.
It's just the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, you know, I mean, but not. We're not saying bet Tringali. It's just that's what you're looking towards when you're looking at guys that have really, really long odds. You know, you ask yourselves, you know, can you even paint a scenario in which they win? You know, and I mean, I can barely imagine a scenario in which Tringali would contend, but you know he's got the game to theoretically do so. I think that's the point that
he's on the tour. I mean, they've all got the game to do so.
Not really,
they?
Though. Really? I mean, not at some of these golf courses. You know, I don't think.
Okay, you know? Like here's a good example. Chris. Okay, they just X that out. All right, Ryan Palmer is 125-1. I'm gonna try to find somebody else that's 125-1 who I think has no shot. Jamie Donaldson, no shot. So, yeah, like Ryan Palmer from Texas plays in the wind all the time. Good putter. Keeps it lower. Hits a nice draw out there.
Hits it real far.
I'd be a lot more... I would pick him before I would pick Graham Dillette, the high ball hitting Canadian dude.
You should have chose Graham McDowell at 100-1, though. That would have been even better, you know... I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Your point.
Yeah, exactly. I think Palmer is probably twice as likely to win as McDowell, and he's a longer shot. So,
well, yeah. Right here it has Graham McDowell at 100-1, and Ryan Palmer at 125-1. But you like Palmer better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just McDowell in his current form, the way
they can play it 500 times, he would never win.
He could play 1,000 times and never win. It's just his game. Really? You know, his game is not. I mean, if he can't do well at St. Andrews,
right?
There's no way he's going to come out to this, you know, big boy golf course. And hang with guys like, you know, Adam Scott, Jason Day,
yeah,
Jordan Spieth. Yeah, you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Those guys are on that next level right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at long shots, I'm not sure that I see a ton off top. I mean, I know you were talking about Kisner earlier, 80-1. That's interesting.
Well, he's got the right kind of game for it.
Yeah, he's got the right type of game. I mean, Charlie Hoffman at like a 125-1 is, you know, interesting. I mean, even a Finau at 200-1. I mean,
yeah,
I could take a flyer there.
Yeah, you think that Finau should be as big of a dog or a bigger dog than Brendan Todd, who hits like a high lollipop slice around the golf course? I don't think so.
You know.
No.
But, I mean, for myself, I really like, I think Matsuyama is probably, there might be some value with him.
Oh, yeah, he's at 40. And you said some people had him at as high as 50.
Yeah. Matsuyama, anything over 40, I think that would be a really, really fun gambling spot for, you know, any recreational gambler. Or Sergio, you know, missed the cut here in 2010, but things were not going well for Sergio at that point in his life. You know, I remember when he took a break from professional golf for a while. I think
so.
It was,
he can pick up the pace of play.
No, he got dumped by Greg Norman's daughter and like couldn't putt anymore or whatever.
So he doesn't have a good record on this golf
course.
So
Sergio right here is listed at 40-1. You like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sergio and Matsuyama at 40-1. I like that. I mean, I like those guys a heck of a lot more than Kuchar at 40-1. Now, is Kuchar going to top 25 as much as those guys? Yeah, he probably will. But is he going to outright win? Does he have the game to outright win and beat guys like a Jordan Spieth or Dustin Johnson or Jason Day if they're playing well? I don't think that he's got enough ammunition. I don't think Matt Kuchar has enough, you know, his the caliber of
rounds that he's firing in his gun are big enough to beat those guys on a golf course like this anymore. That's just my opinion. So I'll take a guy like Matsuyama and Sergio Garcia, who's got the raw talent at least, at that type of price.
Well, they got Phil at 30-1.
See, that doesn't interest me at all.
I'd
rather get Furyk at 50-1.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me. Oh, just because.
Because of what I was saying, that if Phil has a bad hole, he'll make a 7.
Yeah.
If Furyk has a bad hole, he'll make a 5 and be bummer, and then he'll go to the next hole and grind like as hard as he possibly can. So that's what I was. I don't think that Ricky Fowler or Phil are like well suited for the course. I just don't. Mm. Those guys that make doubles and stuff, I just don't. I don't think that they. Like Kuchar, you know, he's going to keep the ball in front of him. He's probably not going to make a lot of big mistakes. Is he going to overpower par fives and like have short clubs into short par fours and stuff? No.
No.
So it's just going to be hard for him to. It'd be hard for him to win.
So, I mean, I watched this tournament last weekend a ton, and I'm so fascinated in the whole Tiger Woods situation right now. Every single time he plays decent, I get excited over the whole situation again. If I were him, I would have played the Barracuda this weekend if I were him, because I just think he needs, reps. You know, tournament
they
reps.
They have him at 30-1.
Yeah, and I don't like that. I think it's very, very unlikely that he's going to contend. But you know, we're seeing signs. We saw signs of magic from him.
The highest finish he has in 2015, I think, is it tied for 17th. Is that right?
The Masters and then the Quicken Loans. What did he finish at Quicken Loans?
He was like top 25.
Yeah, he's got two top 25s. The
Masters, but I think I saw a stat last I was watching, and his highest finish this year is tied for 17th, and he's 266 in the world rankings.
Yeah, I mean,
poor guy.
He's
won at Firestone 8 times, and he can't play the tournament this week.
It's tragic. It'd be the perfect venue for him to try to continue to build some momentum.
But, I agree.
I mean, you watched him, and he can't put 4 good rounds together. He hasn't
been able to for years.
He starts to lose it off the tee, like really crazy bad. I mean, unlike hardly any touring pro that you're going to see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his short game was amazing.
This past week.
I mean, on Saturday, the round that he ended up blowing up and getting himself out of contention, he was even par, I think, through eight holes, was it, Bubba?
Yeah.
Before he blew up. And he should have been, any other guy out there would have been 5 over. I mean, it was a reminder of the way that, because people forget that he struggled with the driver most of his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is he didn't struggle as bad as he does now when he's hitting it bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd be hitting it out of the rough a lot, but he still made a lot of greens in regulation. And when he didn't, he got up and down every time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing about Tiger Woods that was the best thing about him was his short game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
well, his creativity.
Creativity and his short
game. I loved it. During the Open, Paul Azinger had had a phenomenal line. As an announcer, he said, Tiger has gone from being an artist to an engineer.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love that. It was like, nailed it.
Yeah. Too mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's a good point. So
and
I don't
has
know.
He fired his teacher or is he? The
I think
rumors?
He's got, what does he have? He calls it like an advisor, or a consultant or something
Chris
like that.
Chris Como.
Every golf instructor is a consultant.
I look at his golf swing and they slow it down. He's so steep and he's compressing the golf ball. Like, I mean, his club head speed is amazing. I mean, he's probably when he's hitting it good, he's one of the longest, probably the longest 20 guys on tour right now.
Still.
I mean, there's no reason athletically he can't contend, but I mean, he's out there. I mean, there's so much variance in his golf swing.
Wow.
You know, you watch a guy like him versus like Billy Haas or something like that, and it's just like amazing. I mean, he has to be really dialed in for him to get good results. And I mean, he hits some phenomenal iron shots. And he went on some great scoring runs this last weekend. The question is, can he ever get the consistency back? Can he start to play golf again? Like, you know, as opposed to go out there and battle and grind
that
and
seems
hope
like
to catch
that
fire.
That question's being asked now for what, 8 years?
Yeah.
It's 7 years. It's can he do it? It's, everyone knows he's got the tools, but can it happen?
Yeah, Phil and Louis Oosthuizen are both 30-1, and I think both are going to do better than Tiger, probably. I mean,
okay, it just, that, who's also at 30-1?
Yeah, it just
is
doesn't...
Ernie Els history? I mean, should we not even
well,
ever talk
he was
about
history?
Ernie?
And then he won the Open Championship.
Yeah, well, he kind of got it.
Is he ever going to win anything on the tour again? Is he, or is he a good bet to against somebody else, or how would you, or you don't even discuss it?
It's funny. I mean, because he gets these strange tournament matchups. They always put him against weird players. Like, we were talking about that about Graham McDowell, because we always want to bet against Graham McDowell this year. But they always put him up against, Victor, Dubuisson, and it's just like, of course they put him up against him, because
their
games
can't.
Are so like similar and kind of bad in the same ways when they're playing bad. So that's how handicappers and the guys that are running these books are smart. They're not going to put him up against somebody who's like legit.
They've
gonna
started
put him up against a really high variance golfer who's really horrible half the time. That way they can get a decent price on him.
They started to figure out what we figured out. They caught on real quick, and we stopped making money off of it.
Yeah. They know that if they put him up against a Webb Simpson, Webb Simpson's going to beat him 70% of the time right now.
Wow, Webb's got long odds, 100-1.
Yeah, that seems like a fire spot, maybe. He hits it plenty long now.
Yeah. I don't know if he's particularly the best person in the wind, though.
No, definitely not.
Well, we've talked about the 30-1s on this sheet that we've printed out here, the 20-1 players, you've got Stenson, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler, and Bubba.
I think of them, I like Bubba.
I agree with that. I like Bubba the most of those guys.
Okay. Because Bubba played well there last time. He hadn't won a major yet, so now he's going to go back there with two green jackets in his closet.
Right.
And he was hitting his driver amazing around there. And we were talking about Chambers Bay last time, how it was just wide open space with no trees and, like, didn't have great aiming points for him and stuff. This is different than that. Like, Pete Dye courses are all target golf courses where there's always something in the distance that you can pick out and work the ball off of and stuff. So I just think that if he had already won the Masters coming into that tournament, he probably would have won that tournament too. And he has good vibes going in there. Like, I don't know. He just I feel like out of that little group, he's
that would be the
perform.
Guy that I don't think probably neither one of us will bet any of those guys to outright win. But I think that we would both safely say that if you had to pick one in the 21 range to bet,
if you could bet Bubba over Ricky Fowler, if you could bet him against Fowler or Justin Rose, I think I would do it.
Don't bet Phil Mickelson or Tiger Woods, though. I mean, don't bet him this week.
You can root for him, but just don't. Keep your wallet in your pocket.
I'm done. I mean, it's just so difficult on a week to week basis to predict what Tiger Woods is going to do, and I'm just going to go back to being a fan. Just root for him, because it's just the lack of consistency is just. It's just wild. And, who wouldn't shock me if he went out and played good for 4 days? Who the heck knows at this point?
Yeah, four days in a row for him.
It's
been
really
a
unlikely.
Long time.
It's really, really unlikely with the state of his game. But I'm getting more excited because every single time he plays good, like, he showed something last weekend. And I think he will win golf tournaments again. I'm not sure if he'll ever win a major again. And I'm not sure whether he'll ever work it out in his head to psychologically move past some of these issues that he has now, but he sure has the talent, there's no doubt, to win golf tournaments. And I really feel that way after watching him last weekend.
Awesome.
That he's still got that magic somewhere.
He needs to get it together before, the only tournament he's invited to still is the Masters. Like, he needs to notch a regular tour win so he has, like, exemptions into some of these other tournaments.
He does. He's got lifetime exemptions.
Well, I'm saying he's got to be so dejecting to not be able to play these WGCs.
Oh, you mean the WGC Top 50 stuff?
Because
he's got a lifetime exemption on tour.
Tigers,
you can only play in the WGC if you're taught,
Tigers won more money in WGC events alone than most people will ever win in their golf career. He's won like $27 million in WGC events.
Wow.
He's won Firestone 8 times. He's won Doral. Yeah. The only thing I think he hasn't won is the match play. And then they just started doing that HSBC Champions Tournament in like China. And I don't know if he's even played it but one time or something.
If I were him, I'd be taking reps in fields that were weaker, give myself a chance to contend with less pressure, you know, I'd be in Reno this weekend.
Damn, you said that. You said that Stableford too this weekend too.
Yeah, it's perfect.
That
for
would
him,
be
man.
So good for him.
He
what
goes
is he
out there
doing?
And just fired flags and just you know nothing to lose. It's no pressure.
So now let's again clarify to the audience that when you talk about this weekend, that was last week as you're listening.
Yeah,
to
we're
this,
talking
so.
About yeah the yeah. Barracuda.
So we
championship
can't do that. So
Reno.
Let's now go up to there's two guys at 12-1 and one at 15-1 here. We've got Dustin at 12-1, Jason Day at 12-1, and Adam Scott at 15-1.
We like Jason Day in that little cluster. Yeah, but between Adam Scott and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day.
I think we like Jason
Day. Yeah, we like Jason Day in that one for sure. He did well at the course last time. He just won. He's probably hitting it better than he did coming into the tournament last time. He's definitely more confident.
Oh, his confidence is at an all-time high. I told myself.
But how much of his health is the X factor
here?
I think
they said it was
right?
kind of dealt with, right?
Yeah.
No, but
they said
you
that
don't
before,
get
but...
rid of vertigo, do you?
Yeah, I don't
I
know.
I think
but
it's always there.
The bottom line is that he came out and he won in Canada in insane fashion.
Yeah.
Right afterwards, right?
Yeah. And
did you hear about that at all?
No.
Yeah.
No, he won. He won the next tour event.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. I'm sorry. Yes.
So I mean, he's in tip top shape.
And it's the Canadian Open. It's their country's national championship. It's not like he went down and won like the Fries.com opener. It was a strong field.
It was a decent field. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of Canadians in the field that might soften the field a little bit, but not so much.
The leaderboard was great. Bubba, Furyk were right there.
Yeah, it was a good leaderboard. It was a good tournament, too.
So, yeah, I think, you know, DJ, I mean, I once told myself earlier the year, I think if I could get Dustin Johnson at like 11 or 12 to 1 or anything longer, that I was going to definitely fire on him in this tournament. And I just don't even know what to say because, I mean, he clearly, talent alone, he should be winning the golf tournament for sure. More than one every probably 8 or 9 times. I just don't. Psychologically, I just don't know what to say.
Are we talking about Dustin or Tiger?
Yeah, Dustin. I mean, Jason Day, we know Jason Day's got, there's no issues with his mental game.
Right.
His mental game is strong, as we saw. I mean, he could be half dead and still be out there, you know.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because on an episode we did a couple weeks ago with Dr. Greg Steinberg, on mental rules of golf from his book. And he talked not about the mental game. He talked about the emotional game.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, everyone refers to it as a minute. He says, no, it's your emotional game. And it's an excellent point. And we get into these guys and emotionally they're struggling. You know, I mean, we talk about Tiger and Dustin. They both had their emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an excellent point.
Man, I kind of like
Jason Day. With Jason Day,
right.
You get a rock solid guy. And I mean, if his health maintains like it has been, I mean, you got to love him.
Yeah.
I mean, I like him. I like him and I like at the 30-1 or better. I like him and I like Bubba. Mm-hmm. I would say the most.
Yes. We like Bubba, Day and Spieth as like in the favorites pool. Those are like our favorites of the favorites.
Guys that we really had to be like, those guys are going to be in the top 20 for sure.
For this tournament.
For this tournament.
I like the way you're doing it this week, Fred. Like, you know, you take a cluster of all the guys who are at 80-1.
That's great.
Yeah, I really like that. Because like if you take a little cluster of like 4 or 5 golfers that all have the same odds, it makes, I think it's, in a lot of places, it's pretty black and white on who you need to choose. Except for maybe in like this 80-1 area.
Yeah, well, I would think that anything at 100-1 and up, whether you're going 100-1, 200-1, 250-1, 500-1, 1,000-1, I mean, it's like they have John Daly at 1,000-1? No, they have Darren Clark at 1,000-1.
How did he get the invite?
Yeah.
Is he still riding like
a 500-1?
Is he still riding like a British Open victory invite? How is he in this field?
I wanted to ask you. You mentioned something before we started recording about the players who shouldn't be there but are.
Oh yeah.
Would you like to rant for a moment?
Yeah, I'm going to rant about this. All right.
I'll sit back.
So in the first two majors, well, the first three majors, there's all these awesome amateurs, and a lot of times we know historically these people end up being someone. Like we got to see Matt Kuchar play the Masters when he was 20, and now he's Matt Kuchar, and it's awesome. This week, there's 15 slots taken up by shirt-folding, like, club pros, which just kind of, like, it's great for them, but they already have their own thing, and it's on the Golf Channel. It's called the Club Pro Championship. If I want to find out who the best golfer is that works in a pro shop, I'll watch that. But it just kind of sucks because they're taking up spots from people, young people that are, like, thirsty to win out there and actually have a chance to win. And, you know, whether this guy...
Is that called the web.com tour? Yeah. Those kind of guys?
Yeah, well, not even those kind of guys. Like that, the kid we were just talking about, Schneider Jens, who's trying to make enough money to get his tour card for next year. He's top 25 both of his first two events as a professional. And then now he can't play in the field this week because some guy that qualified playing like a sectional against a bunch of other shirt folders is out there eating a spot up. I think that's wrong. I don't know. Because, you know, that guy misses the cut, makes the cut. It doesn't matter. He's going to be, like, rearranging a bunch of, like, gloves on display next week. And it doesn't matter. Schneider Jens in 18 months could be a top 20 golfer in the world. And it'd probably be a lot easier for him to do that if he could get in this tournament.
And I get it. The PGA Championship, this is steeped in the tradition of trying to... you know, be something for the guys that are really, you know.
But isn't that the U.S. Open?
What's that?
I mean, isn't that the way the U.S. Open with the USGA gets involved, and now all of a sudden it's...
Well, the U.S. Open's all about amateurs.
Yeah.
And this is all about professionals. What he's talking about? Teaching pros.
Yeah.
Guys that are, you know, they're great. They're scratch golfers. I mean, but you don't... I mean, how often do you hear about a teaching pro contending in the PGA Championship?
There'll be... 12 of them, the one guy who makes the cuts, like the hero.
Yeah.
And it eats up TV time and interest and stuff. Like, they always do, like, these heartfelt pieces about, like, you know, the guy's story about how he, like... Mm-hmm. And I don't give a shit about that. You got a field of 156 of the best golfers in the world out there, and we're sitting in there like we're watching an episode of The View, listening to Jimmy Roberts talk about... You know, this guy that works in a pro shop. Cool. You know, Ian Poulter used to work in a pro shop, and I don't f***ing like him, but guess what he did? He went and played his way up to... He drives around in Ferraris that have a plaid interior now. So, you know, if you were really that thirsty to be out on tour, or like you were saying, if you're that thirsty to play at an event, go play the U.S. Open sectional qualifier and qualify. That'd be so much more cool for your club than... Yeah, well, I went out and dogged a bunch of... half the field at those qualifiers are dudes that have no chance. I mean, the pro that the course that I grew up playing, oh my God.
I get it. I don't know.
It doesn't grow the game.
I got to say, though, I do like watching when they have them on the Golf Channel, the qualifiers that teach... They put them on the Golf Channel because they're the guys. It's entertaining a little bit. You don't think it's entertaining at all to watch the PGA Championship qualifying?
Yeah, no, I do.
Just in a weird, sick kind of way.
Well, here's the thing. The only thing that makes the thing interesting is if you miss a cut. I'm not sure how they do it for the PGA Championship, but a lot of times if you miss a cut, you just get zero. So like a lot of these guys pay to fly to Wisconsin and net zero, like. That sucks. And the dude who makes the cut makes like, that'd be crazy to go make the cut if you worked at a clubhouse and make 30 grand in a weekend. That'd be insane. And that's a great story. You know what's not a great story? The other 13 dudes who had to like convince their wife that they're going to pay to fly somewhere and go lose.
I wonder how many of them have to convince their wife and then she says, all right, if you don't win, then that's it. You're done. Okay. Just get a job.
If you don't make the
boy,
cut.
If I was married to a gal who would give me a hard time about playing in a major championship, I would be, I think I would have,
all right, well, we won't go there.
Divorced or killed myself already.
Yeah, I'm going to close this topic down. This is getting out of control. I want to ask, where are we on Rory's health? Is he playing, and will he be able to contend with a bad limb there?
I wish
heard he's playing a practice round. I just am assuming he's out.
Yeah, I've just been acting under the assumption that he's out.
If he does play, I mean, you have to imagine it's going to really, you know, it's going to affect his really negatively affect his chances. But I mean,
they've got him at 7-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's if he plays.
If he plays.
I mean, there's no action on these things if he doesn't tee it up.
Right, okay.
But, I mean, this golf course is perfect for him. I mean, he'd be...
Yeah, contended last time.
He would definitely be where I said, you know, Jordan Spieth, was, you know, gun to my head, my choice at the U.S. Open. I mean, Rory, you know, without the injury situation, would be my, definitely, I think, would be almost any handicapper's top choice for this tournament. So, I don't know. I'm just assuming he's not going to play. But if he does play, I don't know. It's just so many unknowns. I don't know. But, I mean, certainly Rory at 80% could contend.
What's weird about this major as compared to the other majors is, like, after the Masters or something, first majors out of the year, you still get to see all the guys play every week because the next major's coming up soon. But, like, it's weird how after the Open Championship, like, half the field stays and goes and plays in Austria. And, like, I just, some of these guys that are up there that are favorites and stuff, we haven't seen play in a while.
Hmm.
Like Stenson and McIlroy, it's been so long since I've seen either one of them hit a golf shot that I'd be, like, hesitant to bet on either because it's tough to say, like, what shape their game is. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, Jason Day coming in off a win where he was hitting it 310 dead straight off the tee on every hole. And I don't know. It's just it was in our face. So we know that he's playing good and stuff. It's hard to say when somebody's either taking a long break or maybe they've been practicing really hard, but you have no idea because it's all been private or whatever.
All right, so let's let's do this. We'll one more guy, obviously, we're going to talk about. Then we'll take our break and we come back and you'll give me just a couple quick hits on, you know, on your predictions for the finals. So, but let's first talk about Jordan. Okay, he's going for his third major of the year. He's been playing well. He contended. He was awfully close.
He finds a way every week to contend.
His mind is there. He's set. So, what do you guys think?
I think he's got the right kind of. See, like we were saying about the leaders last time, were mostly people who could shape shots and really flight it, with the one outlier being Dustin Johnson. He pretty much had a one go-to shot that he went to all the time. What people don't realize is, like, hitting a low bullet is so valuable in a situation like that. Like, even though Bubba's so long and stuff, if you watch him hit a drive in person, he doesn't hit it super high. He hits a missile. And Jordan's, like, the same way. He doesn't hit it a mile in the air. He hits it. He just keeps it in front of him. And that's why we like him and Zach Johnson kind of for the same reasons, because his mistakes are usually so much smaller than other people's mistakes. And when they do make a mistake, they tend to be able to eradicate themselves from it. Where, you know, I mean,
we call that golf smarter around.
Yeah, golf smarter for sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think he has. If he won at Chambers Bay, there's no reason to think that he wouldn't have an insanely good chance of winning at this course. Because they're both about the same yardage. I think this is 7,500 or almost 7,600 at Whistling Straits.
No, it's 7,750. This is like in the 7,700s.
They move it around for the wind, though. They like all the downwind holes, they'll put as far back as they can and all the into the wind holes. The course that I worked at was similar. It was shaped like a figure eight. So basically you'd get nine holes into the wind and nine holes downwind every day. And there's a, you know, there'll be a 510 yard or 20 yard par four, but if they play it straight downwind, they'll still hit a nine iron into the green or a pitching wedge even. So, yeah, I don't think it'll play.
So you think Spieth is?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's just no doubt. I mean, a guy could compete anywhere. And I think this place sets up really well for him.
Yeah, it's got really good greens. Okay. So it's kind of a similar setup.
I think the top, there's like a basically like, I bet you the prop will be, I mean, about what position he finishes or better. I'm sure it'll be like top six or top seven or better, even money. I mean, that's really where people are going to be headed. I mean, there's just, at this point, you can't say he finds a way to contend every week, and particularly in the big events. I mean, he easily could have won. He could have won the British Open. I mean, I don't think there's probably anybody that wasn't watching that thinking he's gonna, you know, get up and down on the road hole and then birdie 18 and win the thing outright. Literally has had a decent chance to win a Grand Slam this year.
Yeah, he makes you beat him. You think there's five guys that are gonna go out there and beat him?
No matter what happens to him,
that's a great point.
It's like you take like the good stuff with you take like the good things with Steve Furyk, with Steve Stricker and Jim Furyk, you know, and he has like all those good qualities. Plus, he's got elite top level talent, you know, with all the grinder mental stuff of those types of players. It's just wild.
It's like when we were just talking about Tiger. He didn't I guess when he first came on the scene, he had way more physical tools than everybody else and stuff. But that wasn't really what was separating him. It was the putting and the chipping and the, like, you know, we were talking about the U.S. Open at Pebble. He made like a 20-foot par putt and like fist pumped really hard. And everybody's like, what's he so excited about? Like, he woke up this morning and was like, man, if I go out and don't make a bogey in the U.S. Open, I'm going to win. And he did. You know, he went out and in the final round did not make a bogey. And so, yeah, that's definitely what was setting him apart back in those days. I mean, not just hitting it further. So that's Spieth's getting the same kind of results because he has the same kind of edge. I mean, I think that Justin Rose is physically more like gifted and just insanely good at hitting a golf ball. But we were talking on the way over here. If I walked out and told you, okay, these guys are both going to play tomorrow. Rose is going to have 14 birdie putts and Spieth's going to have 12 birdie putts, I would still pick Spieth to beat him.
Well, Spieth had this amazing statistic about the percentage, how high his percentage of putts inside of 10 feet he was making.
Yeah, it's like they're free throws.
Yeah, it was incredible how, you know, way beyond the tour average.
He's like 4 to 12 foot. Like he's pretty bad like on really short putts.
Yeah.
But his like 4 to 15 foot, it's just it's like that mid range is off the charts.
Off the charts.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, listen, I'm gonna make a couple of announcements, and then we'll come back with your final predictions.
Awesome.
So as you heard, we recorded this episode 10 days in advance of the PGA Championship because I'm currently on vacation in Park City, Utah, where I hope to bring you at least one episode with a teaching professional there, and I will send you a postcard. But in the meantime, there's only a few days left to register to be one of 4 lucky winners to receive your choice of 2 custom-fit, brand-new Ben Hogan Golf TK15 wedges. Deadline for entry is midnight Pacific time, Monday, August 17th, 2015. And let me tell you how nice these clubs are. I actually just received a set of irons and wedges as a birthday gift from Terry Kaler and the folks at Ben Hogan Golf. And they're stunning. Every person I've shown them to are like, whoa. And especially those who remember the Ben Hogan Golf clubs, they look at these and went, oh yeah, they did it right. Now, I've been a cavity back irons user for decades, but I've also played Terry Kaler's Eidolon and Score golf wedges for years, and I swear by them. But don't just take it from me. This past week, I took these clubs up to Doug Acton. He's the head teaching professional at the exclusive Meadow Club in Fairfax, California. Because another gift I received was a lesson with Doug, who was actually my first teacher before I started doing Golf Smarter back in 2005. So my goal for this lesson was to get some insights on the difference of hitting these blades, the Ben Hogan Golf blades, versus what I've been using, Mizuno cavity backs. Doug has, ironically, he's been fitting and selling both Eidolon and Score wedges for years and was always a big supporter of them. So what I did was, the first chance he got to look at them, I recorded on video. So I just posted a video on our youtube.com/golfsmarterTV channel, and there'll be some links in the show notes, of Doug's first glimpse and swings with the Ben Hogan golf clubs. And let me say, he was really impressed. So trust me, you will be impressed too. Register now to win those clubs. The registration page, the restrictions, and the details are all at benhogangolf.com/golfsmarter. And after you register, tour their site for a little bit. Make sure you start filling out the Hogan Fit bag mapping analysis pages so that you can see how these clubs are specifically fit for your game, your body, and if you only play the wedges, how they're going to complement any other clubs you're in love with right now. Again, sign up before midnight Pacific time, Monday, August 17th, and we'll announce the winner on our next show that will be published on August 18th. That's benhogangolf.com/golfsmarter. And good luck. And now our very own Bubba and Tiger with their predictions on this year's PGA Championship.
All right, so we're just going to – there's no tournament matchups available right now. There's no props. So we're just going to just throw out, tier one guys. We really – we really like are Spieth, Jason Day, Bubba Watson. Probably no value in any of those guys as outright winners, but if you we really like their chances if you want to recreationally just fire on one. Love it. Sergio, Matsuyama, and ZJ, those are the guys in the Tier 2 who we like. There might be some value as you move towards that direction, you know. But I think we really like their chances to finish high. And then long shots, guys that are super talented, have longer prices. If you just want to throw some darts out there, and I mean, and here's where there might be some value. But Ryan Palmer, 125-1. Mark Leishman and Danny Willett, 80-1. Kevin Kisner, 80-1. Those three guys in 80-1 range. Check them out. Justin Thomas, 100-1. I personally love that. I mean, almost anybody who watches the PGA Tour at all knows about that guy at this point. Tony Finau, 200-1. Russell Henley, 150-1. And Danny Lee, 100-1. So that's about eight guys right there in the 80-1 or higher range who we are willing to put our good reputation on. Give you some good sweats. That's what you're looking for. If you bet, if you're just a recreational gambler and you want to bet $20 on you know, six guys, you know, choose some of those guys and you're definitely going to get a good sweat out of a couple of them.
God, I mean, Danny Lee, he has a win and two top tens in his last three starts, I think, up to this point. This is not including Firestone. Keep that in mind, guys. God, I can't believe that he's 100-1 and...
Because he's a youngster and get no respect. Justin Thomas and, you know, it's someone, sometimes these guys got to break through sometime. And yeah. These guys have the talent.
If you're taking Snedeker at 50-1 instead of Thomas at 100-1, you're a real sucker.
You're a real fish. Yeah. Absolutely.